We should start by pressing for a UN resolution on Xinjiang.
That is one opinion on China's treatment of the Uyghurs. This is Friday, the 14th of May, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, the U.S. State Department's International Religious Freedom Reports. More questions than answers about the U.S. military pullout from Afghanistan. Business Scene examines counterfeit products and flexibility for Japanese workers. And the U.S. Attorney General asked Congress for $1 billion to fight violence against women. It is all on today's VOA Asia. United Nations member states met Wednesday to discuss the treatment of Uyghur Muslims in Xinjiang, China. The virtual event angered Beijing, who had urged members not to attend the hearing. VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir spoke about that with VOA's Steve Miller.
China turned up at the meeting, and they sent a young diplomat who's in charge of human rights for the Chinese mission, and he, basically said that he was there to tell the truth and that everything's great in Xinjiang.
So-called genocide, forced labor, systematic rape and torture in Xinjiang are lies of the century, which never happened and will never happen in China.
But at the meeting, basically, diplomats were asking for China to let in the UN Human Rights Commissioner, Michelle Bachelet, who's been asking to visit this region of China where the Uyghur Muslims live. She's been asking for quite a while to go there. So they were agitating for her to be allowed in an unobstructed, unhindered kind of way, because what we're hearing is that the Chinese sort of want to take her on one of these tours where everything's scrubbed clean and looks lovely, and that really achieves nothing. So that was the first and main ask at this meeting. And then there was also, again, keep the international pressure up, highlight the abuses that are going on there, such as torture and women being forcibly sterilized, reports of more than 1 million people being arbitrarily detained in detention camps, which the Chinese say, oh, no, they're not camps, they're re-education or vocational training facilities. And also to just keep this in the spotlight, to keep up the international pressure on China so that it doesn't get away with such violations of human rights. And they're also at the meeting, there were two members of the Uyghur diaspora, but there were also the heads of Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, Ken Roth.
And we should start by pressing for a UN resolution on Xinjiang, most logically at the UN Human Rights Council. Crimes against humanity deserve a commissioned inquiry to collect the evidence and to build the case for prosecution. At minimum, we should press for a resolution of condemnation. Now, I know that won't be easy. It will require active outreach to nations of all regions. But if we could build a global coalition to defend Rohingya Muslims in Myanmar, we should be able to build a global coalition to defend Uyghur Muslims in Xinjiang.
He said that these crimes are crimes against humanity.
So, Margaret, what's next?
Well, I don't think there was any outcome expected. This is the kind of meeting where they discuss options. And they're put out there. And now the next step is to see if anything is implemented or if there's sustained momentum to do something about it.
VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir speaking with VOA Steve Miller. Muslim leaders from the Xinjiang region rejected Western allegations that China is suppressing religious freedom, speaking at a reception Thursday for foreign diplomats and media at the end of the holy month of Ramadan. The event was the latest in a series of moves by the Chinese government to counter accusations of human rights abuses in Xinjiang. Find out more by checking our website at voanews.com, as well as all of our social media platforms. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. A reporter for a now-banned online and broadcast news agency in Myanmar is sentenced to 3 years in prison. U.S. sanctions Chinese official for role in religious persecution. The International Olympic Committee is confident of successful Tokyo Games despite opposition. Pakistan's feminists fight charges of blasphemy. China delivers 500,000 vaccines to Bangladesh. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Secretary of State Antony Blinken released the State Department's annual International Religious Freedom Report, singling out Iran, Myanmar, Russia, Nigeria, Saudi Arabia, and China as some of the world's worst violators of what Blinken termed a core human right. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has the story.
China's systematic surveillance and massive detention of Uyghur Muslims is highlighted in this year's International Religious Freedom Report, as U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken announced Wednesday.
China broadly criminalizes religious expression and continues to commit crimes against humanity and genocide against Muslim Uyghurs and members of other religious and ethnic minority groups. Today, I'm announcing the designation of Yu Wei, former office director of the so-called Central Leading Group Preventing and Dealing with Heretical Religions of Chengdu, for his involvement in gross violations of human rights, namely the arbitrary detention of Falun Gong practitioners. Yu Wei and his family are now ineligible for entry into the United States.
China rejects claims of genocide and crimes against humanity and says it is countering extremism in Xinjiang using vocational education centers. But senior State Department official Daniel Nadell said China has essentially turned the entire region into an open-air prison. Satellite images also document China's desecration and destruction of mosques in Xinjiang. Blinken also called out other offenders, including Iran and Russia, for targeting religious minorities.
In Nigeria, courts continue to convict people of blasphemy, sentencing them to long-term imprisonment or even death. Yet the government has still not brought anyone to justice for the military's massacre of hundreds of Shia Muslims in 2015. Saudi Arabia remains the only country in the world without a Christian church, though there are more than 1 million Christians living in Saudi Arabia.
Blinken also called on Saudi Arabia to free prisoners of conscience like blogger Raif Badawi, who was sentenced in 2014 to 10 years in prison and 1,000 lashes for allegedly insulting Islam and encouraging debate Riyadh found objectionable. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Ahead on VOA Asia, more questions than answers about the U.S. pullout from Afghanistan. Stay with us. Happening now in Asia, India's most populous state of Uttar Pradesh will spend up to $1 billion to buy COVID-19 shots. The move by Uttar Pradesh comes as many Indian states curtail vaccinations due to severe shortages amid a record surge in coronavirus infections. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We are happy you're with us on VOA Asia. The U.S. military has completed about 10% of its pullout from Afghanistan, but defense officials left members of Congress with more questions than answers Wednesday as the U.S. inches closer and closer to President Biden's September 11th withdrawal deadline. VOA's Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb has the latest.
While U.S. troops are engaged in a complete withdrawal from Afghanistan, top defense leaders gave no answers to lawmakers on how to solve several lingering problems. Representative Mike Rogers is the House Armed Services Committee ranking member.
We're here and we're working on it. I'm of the opinion this should have been resolved before you announced you were leaving.
Unanswered questions include, how will the U.S. continue to train its Afghan partners? David Helvey is the Acting Assistant Defense Secretary for Indo-Pacific Affairs.
We are still doing, you know, planning on how we would be able to provide, you know, the type of support that's necessary, you know, from an over-the-horizon posture.
and where to base American forces so military and intelligence assets can continue identifying and taking out regional terror threats. Again, here's Helvey.
We have to maintain what's called access, basing, and overflight, and those are the discussions that we're having.
Virtually all members of Congress at the hearing wanted the Pentagon to quickly find a way to provide special immigrant visas to Afghans who helped U.S. personnel. Roughly 18,000 Afghans have applied for these visas out of fear the Taliban will kill them once the U.S. has left. Congressman Jason Crow's Afghan colleague was murdered by the Taliban in January.
Assassins jumped out and gunned him down in front of his son. A couple of weeks later, his eldest son received this death threat from the Taliban. He and many others like him will soon die unless we act.
Members from both political parties said the withdrawal is the right thing to do after years of military stalemate. Representative Adam Smith is the House Armed Services Committee chairman.
You cannot tell me that after 20 years that doing the same thing for another 1, 2, 5, or 10 would have changed that. So we would have been asking people to die to not accomplish anything.
But other Democrats and Republicans, like Representative Joe Wilson of South Carolina, worry the Taliban, which still has ties to al-Qaeda, may overrun the Afghan government without a U.S. military presence.
I'm really concerned that we're turning the country over to people who have every intent to develop an ability to come back and attack the United States.
If the government falls, many fear the U.S. military may need to re-enter the country, costing an unknown number of American dollars and lives to reestablish bases and retake territory. Carla Babb, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland, recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
This news is from VOA Asia. Japan's COVID-19 vaccine chief is blaming a rigid drug approval system for a slow inoculation campaign that's relying on only one approved shot as a fourth wave of infections raises worries amid preparations for the Summer Olympics. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Counterfeit products and flexibility for Japanese workers are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene. Here's Josh Nist.
China may be the world's biggest market for luxury goods, as well as counterfeits. This has sparked a boom in the second-hand market for those who seek out the prestige at a discount price. However, counterfeits have also mixed their way into the second-hand market, leaving customers uncertain of what they are actually paying for. This is why the so-called luxury appraisers have been in demand, as they are trained to triage handbags, belts, and garments for dodgy serial numbers, stitching, logos, value secondhand goods, and appraise luxury products. Zhang Chen, the founder of Beijing Extraordinary Luxury Technology, says his company handles a large number of counterfeit items.
More than half of the goods we handled are fake. This is the current situation of the industry. Among them, 60 to 70% are so fake, you can tell at a glance.
Zhang drills the rules of luxury into his students, who are hooked onto his every word. His classes are affluent, but from a variety of backgrounds. Zhang's 7-day course costs 15,800 yuan, that is $2,400, but Zhang says it is worth the cost to join his school to get a foothold in a market that is just taking off, as China's second-hand luxury market value climbed to 17.3 billion yuan, or roughly $2.7 billion, almost doubling the previous year. Japanese technology company Fujitsu is maintaining its work-life shift policy, which offers unprecedented flexibility to its 80,000 Japan-based employees since last July. Hiroki Hiramatsu, the corporate executive officer and chief human resource officer of Fujitsu, says the company will move forward with keeping the policy in place.
On the condition that employees select the place of work, the use of office space will be reduced to around 50%, so we're reducing the current office space and renovating them. Currently, the attendance rate of offices averages at around 20%, so most of the work goes ahead online.
Fujitsu first introduced a remote working system in April 2017, but pickup remained at 10% until the coronavirus pandemic. To support remote working, Fujitsu offers employees an added payment of 5,000 yen, about $46 per month, to cover remote work environments instead of commuting expenses. Additionally, the company introduced an AI system that helps leaders visualize work content by showing how much time is spent on specific tasks so they can evaluate how well remote work is running. For Business Scene, I'm Josh Nist.
Making headlines in Asia, the United States sees latex gloves made by Malaysian firm Top Glove Corporation after a shipment was found in Kansas City despite an import ban on its products over forced labor allegations. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We continue on VOA Asia. U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland is asking Congress for an unprecedented $1 billion to fight violence against women, including domestic abuse and sexual assault. VOA's Michael Sullivan reports on the challenges so many survivors face.
A trauma shielded too long by shame and silence, more and more people are raising their voices to combat violence against women. From Washington to South Asia and Europe. As once respected figures in entertainment and other professions, including former USA Olympics team doctor Larry Nassar, face consequences for sexual assaults, traumatized survivors struggle. 2012 Olympic gold medalist Jordan Weaver gave testimony at Nassar's trial.
I'm angry with myself for not recognizing the abuse, and that's something I'm struggling with today.
That's a common response, says a women's rights activist who was sexually assaulted as a college student. Patricia Cumby of Global Rights for Women.
I remember at the time feeling like, oh, is what happened to me a crime or not? And I think that's a very common reaction for a lot of survivors, you know, because violence against women is so normalized.
Other young victims are trafficked for prostitution or pornography, sometimes by acquaintances, increasingly by street gangs. Lois Lee of Children of the Night.
They're gang raped. They're beaten beyond, you know, belief. They're addicted to drugs. They're chained to furniture. They're put in cages.
And sometimes coerced into involvement in major crimes, including shootings and robberies. Abusers can have a psychological hold over their victims, which workers in the field call a trauma bond, says a survivor of domestic sex trafficking who helps other survivors. Alia DeWeese of the Safe House Project.
Now imagine that bond starting in a 12-year-old girl, 13-year-old girl, and going, you know, for most of their life, just with a continuum of different faces attached to it.
An international study says nearly half of young victims of human trafficking are trafficked by family members. Safe House Project's Brittany Dunn.
You're just seeing the system break down in so many ways that these kids are either ending back with their family member who is trafficking them. They might end up in foster care and then run away and end up on the streets.
Whether victims of trafficking or domestic violence, survivors need comprehensive help, says a charity worker who oversees transitional housing for Muslim women and others. Malika McDonald of ICNA Relief USA.
women have been held captive almost, have no savings, have no really employable job skills.
Some women and trafficked teenagers are drawn into prostitution or pornography, or they struggle in one homeless shelter after another. Malika McDonald.
It's really difficult when you have a woman who, you know, maybe has left an abusive marriage, is trying to make a better life for herself or for her children, but every day she's exposed to someone in the shelter who's, you know, actively abusing drugs or alcohol, or people who have severe mental health issues.
What is needed? They say long-term housing, education, and emotional support. To that end, they say more government funding will not solve the problem, but will help. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News.
We continue now. The Tokyo Summer Olympics, which open on July 23rd, will feature four new sports: surfing, sport climbing, skateboarding, and karate. American athletes will compete in all four of the new sports and have a good shot at taking home some medals. Maxim Moskalkov has the story.
The surfing competition will be held at Shidashida Beach, located some 64 kilometers from Tokyo. American athletes are ready, says the head of USA Surfing.
And the waves are breaking over sand, and they're generally not super powerful, like you would find in Hawaii. But they're, you know, Caroline Marks grew up in Florida, so she's really used to those types of waves. As did Chloe Andino growing up in San Clemente. So I think our chances for medaling are really good.
Four-time world champion Carissa Moore is 28, the youngest team member. She's expected to have a good chance of winning a medal.
I've just kind of been surfing and training like I would for a normal event, and I think the more time I've had has actually let me kind of go back to a basic level and really like look at my surfing and see where I could make improvements.
All in all, 40 athletes will compete for medals in surfing, 20 men and 20 women. They will be competing on shortboards that are known for their maneuverability. Skateboarding will include two disciplines. The first one is street skateboarding, which focuses on flat ground tricks, grinds, slides, and aerials within urban environments and public spaces. The second one is park skateboarding, that takes place on special ramps. Among 80 sportsmen competing for medals, 16 are Americans. 16-year-old Bryce Wettstein won the 2019 National Championship for Women's Park and is widely seen as Team USA's top medal contender.
I want everybody this year to see that skateboarding can be everything. Because a lot of times the things that emerge out of skateboarding are that you never really see the full picture of skateboarding when you have just one person, because so many people do it in a different way.
Competition is expected to be heated in sports climbing.
With only, you know, two men and two women representing USA, that's a really high performance that's going to be required to make it, you know, not only obviously to the games, but to make it to the qualification, out of the qualification round in Tokyo, and then also into the finals. We just hope they have their best performance on both of those days.
Sports climbing features three main disciplines: speed, bouldering, and lead. Speed climbing pits two climbers against each other, both climbing a 15-meter wall. In bouldering, athletes scale a number of fixed routes on a 4.5-meter wall in a specified time. In lead, they attempt to climb as high as possible on a wall measuring over 15 meters in height within a specified time. In Tokyo, the three will be combined. Team USA Karate is still working on its lineup. So far, only Sakura Kokumai has secured her spot on the team to compete in the women's individual kata event.
I can't tell you how much I've given up in my pursuit of just chasing the highest level of sport. It's an awesome feeling to know that we reached the pinnacle of sport. You know, there's nothing bigger or greater than the Olympics.
Athletes will also compete for medals in baseball and softball, relatively new sports that are coming back after the pandemic break. Maxim Moskalkov for VOA News, Washington.
Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team. That includes Jim Stevenson, Amy Heibels, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman. Make sure you stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.